Okay. I want every 4- and 5-year-old in the house up here if they won't come. Real quick. I want them sitting on this mat. What I'm going to do is give you a taste of Sunday school tonight. And first of all, I would like to recognize all of our Sunday school teachers, including our leaders, the Thompsons. If you would stand, I'd just like to recognize you because I know sometimes we are kind of the unsung heroes. If you're teaching a class, just quickly stand, and we'd like to just recognize you. Yeah. I have a burden for Sunday school because that's where I actually got my calling. It was in a Sunday school class. It wasn't in a Pentecostal Sunday school class. It wasn't until I came to this church that I really found God in the fullness. My Sunday school class taught me all about the miracles, but they didn't teach me that God really had the power for me. And that's my burden, I think, will always be in Sunday school. And I got this idea, an altar call, actually. And so this is what I would do. I'm using 4s and 5s, but this is what I would do if I was teaching to my 3-year-old class. In case you've been wondering how long I've been teaching, I started again. I taught before Lana was born, and then I started again when Jordan Powell was 3. So you can imagine how long I have been teaching. So this is a story of Daniel. And we'll start the next slide, please. Okay. The sun was just waking up when Daniel popped out of bed. He'll let you see the kids. Why was Daniel up so early? He wanted to pray. He prayed every day. Daniel was one of the king's best workers, but he needed God's help to do a good job. The king praised Daniel for his good works. This made the other workers mad. Can I see your mad faces? Let's see your mad faces. They were mad. So they decided to trick the king into signing a rule that would get Daniel into trouble. Have you ever been in trouble? The king made a, The king made a big mistake and signed their silly rule. They said that anyone who prayed to God would be thrown into a den of hungry lions with enormous teeth. Let's see your teeth. Ah, can you do that? Okay. I get a little more in my class. Daniel heard about the rule, but he said, I'll pray anyway. Nobody, not even the king, has a right to make a rule like that. Not even the king. Daniel went straight to his house and he prayed. He knew God would hear. He knew God would help. The men who hated Daniel saw him praying. They could not wait to get him into trouble. So they went to the king and they tattled. Have you ever tattled on somebody? You tattle on your brother and your sister? Do you? They were being mean. The king was sad. Let's see your sad faces. Can you do sad? Oh, that's good. And he felt really bad. Daniel was his friend. But you know what? In their kingdom, a rule was a rule, and he couldn't change it. And Daniel was arrested. That means that soldiers came and took him. And the big soldiers led him to the lion's den. Roar! Can you roar? Oh, that's pretty good. Lions wanted to eat. Are you guys hungry? I'm hungry. I want to eat too. May your God save you, the king said hopefully. What do you think is going to happen? You guys all know this, though, but my 3-year-olds probably wouldn't. Whoosh! The soldiers threw Daniel into down. Plop! There were hungry lions all around. Let's see. What do you think happened? And the king went home. He couldn't eat and he couldn't sleep. He couldn't think about anything but Daniel. Early in the morning, the king hurried out of bed and scurried to see if his friend was still alive. Did your God save you? He shouted anxiously. Then he waited for an answer. Are you waiting for an answer? You think Daniel's going to answer? Yes, Daniel called out. My God sent his angels to shut the lion's mouth. The king was so happy. He pulled Daniel out of the lion's den, he commanded. And then the king made a new rule. From now on, everyone in my kingdom will pray to Daniel's wonderful God. See, I think it's important in Sunday school that you obviously aim for the age that you're teaching. And now if I was doing this, I would have a craft, and these kids, some of these made these last week. And Tim, I need my helper out here, if you'd come. So if you made a mask, if you can find your mask. Okay. And I would have animal crackers, because animal crackers have lions. Okay, I want you guys to stand. Okay. You want to stand around the mat? Can you stand up around the mat? Yep, get around the mat. He's going to help you roar. I gotta be able to throw somebody on the mat, so you gotta stand around the mat. You wanna stand here. You never know what you get in Sunday school. Someone else want a mask? Okay, Juliana. I think you're light enough I can actually lift you. Okay, we're gonna practice. Everybody's gonna be 3, 4, and 5. I wanna hear everybody roar. Okay. Now, you got to remember that when Daniel goes in the lion's den, you have to be quiet. So I want you all to be roaring lions. And the kids are going to help roar, and the lion's going to help roar. But when Daniel goes in, I want all the mouths to shut. Okay? And now, if I was actually doing this in my class, every kid would get a turn, but I won't subject to that. We're going to do one kid, so I want everybody to roar until Daniel goes in the lion's den.
Roar! Can I eat her now? Can I eat her?
And that's how I would teach Daniel in the lion's den. Okay, thank you very much, kids. You can go sit down again.
Good. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, that felt good. Don't look at me. What do you do for a treat? Man, at least I'm not hungry. You know, I used to be really hungry. Well, now I'm in the king's palace because I'm kind of old and weak. But there was a time when I wasn't so lucky. It was a long time ago. I had just become king of the den. I was the biggest, baddest, meanest, roughest, toughest lion in the whole den. I remember how mean I was. I scratched, I clawed, I ate my way to the top, and then they picked me to be the king of the den. I was frightening, I was scary. All I wanted to do was eat something. Eat a big bone, eat a human that was thrown into my den. Oh, but I didn't know what to do. All the lions, there were so many of them. We were starving. We were hungry. There was no food, and there were so many of us. And now, as king of the den, I had to come up with something to eat. I was jumping as high as I jump. I was jumping as high as I could. I was scratching at the stone that closed the den. Nothing was happening. Then one day, a miracle took place. Into the den walked an angel. Beautiful, bright angel. She came in. I thought that I could eat her, but I decided that probably wouldn't be a good idea since she was God's messenger. So instead, I sat down beside her. I was so hungry. She even gave me a bone to chew on. I think it was a miracle. I was gnawing on my bone. I was chewing. I was so hungry. And she started telling me a story about a special man that was in the kingdom up above the den. He was a special man. His name was Daniel. Daniel was one of three presidents over the whole Medes and Persians kingdom. King Darius had appointed him. King Darius was really organized. He picked 120 princes over his kingdom. And then he picked three presidents, among whom Daniel was the chiefest. That means he was the best. King Darius loved Daniel. So much so that the other presidents got jealous. They were angry. They were so angry. They said, what can we do to get Daniel in trouble with King Darius? They thought, they paced, they finally came up with something. It took them a long time because Daniel was perfect. Daniel was very good. He had a good spirit and he did everything right. And so they said, what can we do? We can't do anything. Wait. We'll get Daniel in trouble with the worship of his God. We know he doesn't worship the gods of the Medes and Persians. So they ran to King Darius. They made a rule that King Darius liked because he was a king like I was. And kings like people to kind of give them attention. And King Darius sat there and he read the decree and it said, nobody but nobody worships anybody but you, King Darius, for the next month. Wow. King Darius is like, whoa, that's pretty cool. I like that. So he signed the decree and it became law. But what did Daniel do? I know what Daniel did. Daniel got scared, started shaking his legs, and he went home and he hid. No, Daniel went to his house. He went to his window, cracked it open, got on his knees, and began to worship God, facing Jerusalem like he did three times a day. And those ugly presidents and those princes were sneaking around his house and they heard him and they ran like tattletales. Anybody hear a tattletale? Gotcha. They ran like tattletales and they ran and told King Darius, King Darius, you made a decree. You said nobody worships any other god but you for the next 30 days. And we caught Daniel worshiping his God. What you gonna do, King? What you gonna do, huh? The king said, I have to obey my own rules. He was so mad. He was so brokenhearted. But he had to do what he said. So you know what he did? He grabbed Daniel and he threw him into the den of lions. Just like he said. They started to roar. They started to run. But the angel was there and stopped him, said, no, you can't eat him. He's the special one I told you about. Don't touch him. Well, Daniel was scared to death, but then he realized that this was for his God. And so God would protect him through all of his troubles and even through this. So Daniel prayed and he went down and he sat right next to me. And he started scratching me behind the ear. You know, he smelled really good on my plate. But when he was scratching my ear, it felt kind of warm and fuzzy. I liked it. We became fast and ready friends then. I tell you what, though. King Darius, he was in his palace. And he was walking back and forth. He was worried. He was sad. He didn't eat all night long. Because Daniel was his friend. And he didn't want Daniel to die. And he just knew that them hungry lions were down there. And they were going to pounce him. So he prayed and he fasted all night. Not to his gods, but to the one true God. He prayed and he fasted. And then the next morning, Darius ran to the stone. He rolled away the stone and he looked down into the den and he screamed, Daniel, are you alive? And Daniel looked up and he saw the king's shiny crown and he knew it was Darius and he said, your servant's alive and well. The lions were going to eat me up, but an angel of God came and stopped them. And King Darius was so happy. He was so excited that he pulled Daniel out of that lion's den immediately. He took him to his house. He fed him because he was probably hungry. He probably gave him a bath because he smelled like pussycat. And he took him in there and he was so excited. But at the same time, Darius was happy. He was also angry. Now remember, I told you he had 120 princes. He had three presidents. Daniel was the third and he was his favorite. So there were 122 guys. Darius got so mad that he made a decree. His decree said that nobody in all the land of the Medes and Persians get to worship any other god than the God of Daniel. That's what he did. And he also said, you know what? You 120 princes, you dirty, rotten, scoundrel presidents, and your governors, and his counselors, that was over 120 people. He said, guess what? You all are going to the lion's den. And he threw all 120 something something of them in the lion's den. And you know what he did? He said, that's not enough because you're dirty, rotten men and you're bad and you were against Daniel's God, so I'm against you. And then he, you know what he did? He threw in their wives and their children. There were probably over 500 people thrown in the lion's den. I remember, because it was the year of our Lord, 538 BC, when it began to rain people. Oh, the lions, we all gathered around. We were so hungry. All their bones were broken before they hit the ground. Now, some of you may have trouble in your life. You may have situations that you don't like. Bullies at school, people that pick on you. You know what two things Daniel did that saved him from the lion's mouths that day? He had a good spirit, the Bible says. In Daniel chapter 6, read it for yourself. And you know what else he did? He was faithful. Faithful to God in prayer those three times a day when he opened his window. And he didn't let no crazy rules of his government change his mind. He did it anyway. And God protected him from the worst possible death that day. The same thing can happen to you in your lives. Some of you may be struggling with faithfulness. Some of you may be struggling with a good spirit because of trouble that's come your way. Some lion that's nipping at your heels. Maybe he took a chunk out of some place that's private or something on your way out the door because he's chasing you down. And you're feeling all sad and icky. Just remember, you stay faithful to God. And you keep a good spirit and God will protect you. And while you're doing that, remember, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Do the best that you can. Don't worry about what you want to do or what God's going to have you do later. Just do the best that you can with whatever task you're given. Because if you do, I promise you with a lion's heart that God is going to open doors and you're going to be doing stuff that you never dreamed possible. And pretty soon, those things that you're doing are going to line up perfectly with your personal desires and the talents that God gave you. Pastor Roy.
Thank you, Brother Tim. I am so excited about what God is doing in our Sunday school, our children's ministries, our bus ministry. You know, if you win the heart of a child, if you take and you have some of these junior Bible quizzers, get the Holy Ghost when they're 6, 7, some as early as 5 years old, and they live for God their whole entire life, they can be productive in the kingdom of God for 60, 70 years. Or sometimes we win them when they're 60 and 70 years old. Not that that's a bad thing, but there's all those years that that person misses out on their life on being able to do something for God, being able to see maybe their dreams not be able to be fulfilled because they didn't know what we know until they were many, many, many years later. We're going to close this service out tonight. I want to thank all of our Sunday school teachers. I remember many, many, many years ago, I think the very first part of my involvement in Sunday school was when I was a teenager, and I played the demonic man of the Gadarenes, and I was in Sister Jan Rager's Sunday school class, and I helped Sister Jan out. Could you stand, Jan? Would you stand? She's the lady that taught me the bus ministry, along with my mother, and also taught me how to be a Sunday school teacher. And Sister Jan was an awesome, incredible Sunday school teacher, and I thank her for her impact that she's had on my life for all these years. Some things you may walk away and you may stray away, but some things you'll never forget. And when I was a child and I grew up in the church, there were years later I kind of put God on the back burner and went out to seek my fame and fortune, if you want to call it that. But you never forget. You never, ever forget. All of those memories are still up there. So in closing here tonight, we're going to turn to the book of John. And I want to start reading chapter 6, verse 8. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said unto him, "There's a lad here which hath 5 barley loaves and 2 small fishes, but what are they among so many?" And Jesus said, "Make the men sit down." Now there was much grass in the place, so that the men sat down in number about 5,000. So if you can just imagine this, 5,000 men, and who knows how many women and children were there. It could have been a crowd somewhere the size of the city of Sun Prairie. 25,000 people could have been there that day. We don't know. They just numbered the men. So looking at this miracle and looking at what Jesus did, and Jesus said, "Make the men sit down." And so they sit down, and Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to the disciples. And the disciples, it goes on and talks about breaking the loaves and the fishes, about the miracle of the loaves and the fishes. We've all probably heard this story told. We've probably told this story, maybe to our children, about the miracles that Jesus did that day with the loaves and the fish. But I want you to take and understand a few things about this miracle that really sticks out in my mind, and that's really, really been in my heart for many, many years. How many of you have your paper bag with you? Everybody have their paper bag? I want you to open up that paper bag right now. This is the exciting thing about Sunday school. How many of you have 2 little fish in your paper bag? Is there 2 little fish in there? And you should have 5 little pieces of cracker, 5 little tiny little loaves, give or take. Should have. Not really much there, is there? You think if you were hungry, that 5 loaves, some of you are snacking on yours already, do you think that would really fill you up? You wouldn't. It wouldn't really fill you up, would it? So I can imagine, if you could just imagine with me for a few minutes here, that young lad that day when he left home, and he maybe was in a hurry because he had heard that Jesus was going to be there, And he wanted to go hear and he wanted to go see what this Jesus was all about. So he grabbed whatever he could grab on his way out of the house. I can hear his mother. She tells him, don't forget to grab a snack. So he goes and he grabs two little fish and five little loaves and he throws them in a bag and out the door he goes. And he meets up with his buddies and they head out to where Jesus is supposed to be teaching. So they get out there and they settle in and they work their way closer and closer and closer. And I could see as he works his way to where that he can get up close enough to Jesus. Kind of like if you remember the pictures of the little kids poking their heads underneath the carnival tents back years ago in the 40s and 50s. Didn't have enough money to see the carnival, but they're going to poke the circus. They're going to poke their heads under the tent. And they're going to, we've all seen those, I think it's Norman Rockwell pictures. These little kids I can see as they work their way closer to Jesus. And they get there. Now Jesus, this is the amazing thing about Jesus is, Jesus, he understands how human nature is. He understands that in order for me to minister to these people, in order for me to take and teach these people, they're hungry. They've been out here all day long. How many of you have been out working all day long? Or you've been out in the hot sun all day long and you haven't had anything to eat or anything to drink? Boy, after a while, it doesn't matter how good the preacher is. Doesn't matter how good the context of what the preacher's preaching. It's like when you're at camp and you know that it's 12 noon. It's time to go over there to the lunch line and the preacher's at 12:15. What are you thinking about? You're not thinking about the great things the man of God's saying. You're thinking about that lunch line. Now, let's be honest. How many of you have ever been there? 12 noon on here on Sunday, we start looking at our clocks at 11:20. And we're thinking, okay, it's about time for him to wrap up. Anytime now he can finish preaching because we've got to be over there and wherever we're going for the summer, the Sunday buffet at noon. Anybody ever do that? Some of you are thinking right now, it's 8:05. If he hurries up, we can get to Pizza Hut and still be home by 9:15. Jesus understood that he had a little bit of to doings with the creation of man. He was God in the flesh. He understood man. He understood man's needs and man's desires. And he realized if I don't feed these people, I'm going to lose them. So I gave you a snack and we'll be done by 10. How many of you ate your snack already? Did it get you very far? So here's this little lad and Jesus looks around and he asks his disciples, he says, well, how much money we got? And I can see as they go through and they come back and say, Lord, we don't have enough money. We got maybe a couple hundred bucks. So Jesus says, well, that's not going to work. Besides, there's not a bakery in town. There's not any place in town. The McDonald's burned down and the Burger King, they're closed on Saturdays. There's no place to get the food anyway. So Jesus starts thinking. He's like, go among the crowd. Go among the crowd. See what you can find. Maybe somebody here in the crowd has a snack. So they go in the crowd and they go walking through the crowd and they're looking and they're looking and they're looking and they're looking and they find this little boy sitting over here. Do you have your bag? Did you eat it already? He already ate it. Do you have your bag? Did you eat it already? You already ate it. Did you eat your bag? Can I have your bag? Thank you. So he finds a bag. I'll get it back to you. He finds a young lad that has nothing more than a little snack. It's all he's got. Two little fish and five little loaves. Some of you have already eaten yours. But you see, this is the thing that really jumps out at me in this miracle. We can look at it as just the loaves and the fish. But if you really look at this deeper, and you really look into this miracle, there's so much here that really applies to us. And that's what I love about Jesus and the way he did things. You see, that little boy, and this is no cut to anyone here that's already eaten your lunch, but that little boy could have sat over there and he could have ate all of his lunch. Could have ate it all. Like some of you tonight. You've already eaten your lunch. It's gone. There's nothing left in your bag. It would have filled his needs. Those of you that already ate your little snack, it fulfilled your need for just a little bit. It didn't fulfill it for very long, and it's not going to fulfill it for very long because there's not very much there. So his needs were met. But what I like about this little lad that day is he took his little bag and he brought it up and he gave it, symbolizing here in Sunday school, okay? He gave it to his master. He gave it to Jesus. He realized that it wasn't much. Now don't eat his bag. That's his over there. He already ate his. I watched him. He was just going to bless it. Maybe I better. I remember when we were kids and he'd say, "Let me bless your candy bar." And I'm pretty sure Snickers you don't have to pay tithes on, but he taught us well. That's why we used to get the Charlton Chews, because Dad could take his cut and there was still enough left, even though they didn't taste as good as a Snicker. So here. Oh, I love it. This is awesome. Who said Sunday school can't be fun? So here he gives his bag to the master. And he gives it to Jesus. I trust him. He gives his bag all that he had. You notice he didn't hold anything back for himself. He didn't look at that and say, "Jesus, I'm just a little boy. I haven't had anything to eat, and I'm really hungry. I think if maybe I'll keep one fish and one little piece of bread, and I'll give you what's left." He didn't do that. So many times when we look at our lives and we look at what we have to give, we want to keep something back because we're afraid to give it all. We don't want to give it all. There's just something about human nature. We don't want to give everything to the master. We want to keep something. I have to keep something for myself. What about my needs, God? What about my needs? Sometimes we just want to hold on to things. For years in my life, I struggled to try to hold on to things only to find out that it didn't matter anyway. You struggle so hard to get what you've got, and then you don't want to give it up because you're afraid, if I give it up, then what am I going to have left? All the while, the master's saying, "Don't you trust me? Don't you trust me here?" You see, what I love about this miracle is what Jesus did with what the little boy gave him. See, the little boy didn't have much to give, but he gave all that he had to give. And what did Jesus do with what the little lad had? First thing he did is he blessed it. The same thing applies for you and your life and me and my life. Whatever's in my bag, whatever's in my life, that little brown bag that you're holding there in your hands tonight, whatever's in it represents your life, what you have to give to the Master. And when you give that to him and you don't withhold anything back, the first thing he's going to do when he gets it is he's going to bless it. He's going to bless it. And if we know anything about Jesus, if we know anything about the Master, what he blesses generally is multiplied. So if you give him everything you have to give him, he can bless everything you have, and then everything that you're trying to hold back, everything you're trying to hold on to, doesn't get that blessing. And sometimes that's why we walk away and we're still hungry inside, because we wouldn't give it all. We wouldn't give it all. But Jesus, he saw that little lad. And if you could stand, and if our musicians can come, he saw that little lad, and he took what he had, and he blessed it, and he broke it. You notice the sequence there? Notice the sequence? It's a blessing, and then it's a breaking. Sometimes we wonder why we get blessed by God and only to turn around to get broken. And we wonder, God, what in the world are you trying to do in my life? And God's saying, in order for me to perform the miracle I need to perform in your life, I'm going to bless you, but then I'm going to break you. And then when I break you, and you're down to the point to where that the total is this huge sum is greater than the little total, if I'm saying that right, then God can take and start to perform a miracle in your life. And we look at our lives and we look at where we are today and we look at the ministries that we're involved in. Maybe you're here tonight and you're, and I know some of you already ate it, but I'm going to use this as an example, and you've already eaten your lunch. You look at Jesus and you say, I've already eaten my lunch. I don't have anything left. Sometimes we come to him and we've got all kinds of problems and all kinds of hurts, and we're very empty inside. No doubt among that crowd that day, there was other people there that had something to eat and had already eaten it. But they were still a recipient of the miracle. They still were a recipient of the blessings and the miracle of the little lad. So if you have your bag with you tonight, even if it's empty, and there's nothing left in it, are you willing to give your emptiness to the Master? I would rather give him nothing than hold back nothing and get nothing in return. But sometimes God's greatest starting point is nothing. He started this whole world and universe with absolutely nothing. Maybe you've taken a portion of what God, a portion of what's in your bag, and you've just given a small portion because you want to hold something back. You got to keep something for a rainy day. Or maybe you're there and your bag is still full and you're looking for so much more, and you want to take it and bring it to the Master and say, here, Lord, here's my life. I'm withholding nothing. Everything that I have, I'm giving it to you. I'm laying it down on this
altar tonight and saying, God, here I am. Use me.
So if you're there tonight and you have your bag, bring that bag down to the altar and give it to the master. Say, here it is, Lord. Here it is, Lord. I've got nothing left to give but what I have. And what I have, I want to give to you. And I want you to start to pray, because this is more than just a little paper bag. This is more than just a few little crackers and a few little fish. This is life. This is life.